It's 5:06 and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, Wisconsin has one of the worst entrepreneurial rates in the country. We'll hear about efforts to change that.
First, our next guest says there are lots of high-achieving kids trapped in circumstances beyond their control. What they need most, she says, is not race-based affirmative action, but fair systems of opportunity and a college admissions process that doesn't exclude them. Her solution, place-based affirmative action that looks at the geography of poverty, violent crime, and underperforming schools as a true measure of need. Our guest is Cheryl Kasson. She joins us. She's a professor of law at Georgetown University. She's the author of several books, including Place, Not Race, A New Vision of Opportunity in America. Cheryl, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
And Cheryl, to start off, what's wrong with race-based affirmative action as it's practiced today?
Well, it's a rather blunt instrument. In elite higher education, where affirmative action most matters, you can look out in a classroom and see optical diversity, different skin colors, but often if you look at the background of the kids, there's not that much difference. Most of the kids are very advantaged. And a lot of the kids who benefit from race-based affirmative action, in addition to not being advantaged, are not from the United States and don't come out of this history, our unfortunate history of Jim Crow and racial segregation, and don't suffer the current disadvantage of segregation. And meanwhile, using race in admissions, it causes a lot of resentment. People of color are not the only people who are struggling in American society. So I prefer using place and other reforms that have the possibility of encouraging rather than discouraging cross-racial alliances for fairness and access to opportunity for everyone.
So how would this work? Let's break it down. If we transition then from race-based affirmative action to race-neutral ways to address those same inequalities, what would that look like?
Well, I'm arguing that the admission process should be scrubbed of any practices that currently reinforce advantage. So two things. I would say you need a holistic admissions process that allows strivers to identify the structural barriers they've had to overcome. If they come from a place that has, say, 20% or more of the people are impoverished, either their neighborhood or their school, that's something that should be taken into account, because by definition, you're probably in an under-resourced school, and you could be the valedictorian of your school, but you're competing with kids who may have 20 AP classes available to them. So place should get the kind of consideration that's currently assigned to race. I also say low family wealth should be a consideration, because that's a considerable disadvantage. But also, there are other reforms that can introduce more fairness into the process. SAT scores should be optional or not used at all. Financial aid should return to being based solely on need, not so-called merit. Legacy preferences should be scrapped. And the admissions process should screen for those factors that research shows truly predict success. Cumulative high school GPA is the number one predictor of success in college. And the second strongest predictor is grit, the willingness of the student to do the work. And there are ways to screen for that in the admissions process.
What kind of kids do you think would get included in this place-based approach that aren't getting included right now?
Well, currently, only 42% of all Americans live in a middle-class neighborhood. And so high-achieving kids that are not in a middle-class neighborhood, and that's down, Frank, that's down, by the way, from 65% in 1970. So kids who are in lower opportunity neighborhoods but are high-achieving would benefit. Now, Yes, this would disproportionately benefit African-American and Latino students because they disproportionately live in low-opportunity settings. But any high-achieving kid from a low-opportunity setting deserves for that to be a part of the consideration regardless of their race.
So to look at this from a critical point of view, why do you think we should be looking at race-neutral policies when part of the goal is to address racial inequities?
Well, currently there are 8 states in the United States that have banned race-based affirmative action. And the Supreme Court, in a recent case, the Schutte case from Michigan, has said that it's okay for voters to ban race-based affirmative action if they want to. This policy is under political attack, and it's under legal attack. In the Fisher case out of Texas, the Supreme Court came up with a more difficult standard to meet if someone like Abigail Fisher challenges a race-based affirmative action program. So part of the reason I'm recommending race-neutral reforms is because affirmative action's on life support, and if there are ways to get very close to the numbers you might get with race without using it, and you can avoid a lawsuit potentially, and you can also avoid racial resentment. I think it's better to face the reality that this race-based affirmative action is dwindling and come up with a logical replacement that promotes fairness and access and more social cohesion.
And so let's talk a little bit more about the legal standing. So in April, the Supreme Court upheld a Michigan law banning affirmative action in college admission. As you said, it's on life support, and it seems to be struggling nationwide. What do you think is at stake, if nothing else, to address the opportunity gap takes its place, and maybe we keep seeing legal challenges and a leaning away legally and otherwise from affirmative action as it is now?
If I understand your question correctly, are you suggesting that even if we went to place that kind of policy would also be attacked?
No, just the way the trend now. If we don't fill that void with something else like your policy, what do you see as being at stake?
Well, currently in American society, the opportunity structure is such that only people who are already advantaged really have a shot. As I said, only 42% of Americans currently live in a middle-class neighborhood. And if you can buy your way into what I call a gold standard neighborhood, and I'm sure your listeners know automatically what kind of neighborhoods or towns I'm talking about, you automatically have access to highly selective K-12 education that sets you up very well to enter selective higher education. But if you're outside of those advantaged networks and neighborhoods, you have a much more difficult problem. And what we have right now is a society where there's a lot less social mobility than we profess than we think America is supposed to be about. So I think without strategies that systemically attack the systems of exclusion in our society, we're going to get more of the same: growing inequality and a society that works only for people who already have access.
Now, you said that you think that this sort of place-based approach would address issues of white backlash and resentment, and I guess encourage different people, different groups to get along and not be used as what you call a wedge. How do you see that playing out?
Well, in the book, my final chapter, which is called Reconciliation, I hold up examples of multiracial coalitions that were bipartisan and included white Republicans as well, in which they moved a policy toward a fairer direction. And the example I lead with is the Texas 10% plan. In Texas, if you graduate in the top 10% of your high school, you're automatically guaranteed access to a University of Texas college or campus. And that policy was the result of a coalition of strange bedfellows, white rural Republicans, blacks and Latinos, representatives in the state legislature, whose kids were not getting into the flagship university. And that policy, which has been in place for more than a decade, has been enormously successful at raising the college-going behavior of students in low-opportunity places. And although it's been attacked, and you know, people who live in advantaged jurisdictions have tried to get it repealed, this coalition of strange bedfellows has held together. They may not agree on other issues, but they've held together and protected that policy from being repealed. And that's an example of the saner, more functional politics I'm advocating for. You know, we're in a really bad place in American society. And I know Wisconsin, which has gone through, you know, some pretty bruising political battles. You know, my argument is that unless and until progressives who care about diversity begin to be overt and in seeking reconciliation between struggling whites and people of color and pursue policies that are grounded in the notion of a common good, I think we're just going to get more of the same, a divisive kind of politics and a society that only works for the advantaged.
We're talking about our guest proposal to transition from race-based affirmative action to a place-based plan instead, geared toward helping students who are dealing with poverty, with violent crime, and underperforming schools in their neighborhoods. Cheryl Cashin stays with us. Her new book is called Race, Not Place, A New Vision of Opportunity in America.
And you can join the conversation. What do you think about moving away from race towards place when it comes to affirmative action in higher education? Do you think this would help address questions of fairness in college admissions and bring more talented students to the table, to universities who might not be able to get there just based on where they grew up, where they went to school? Or do you think schools should continue to try to use race as a basis for affirmative action to the extent they're allowed to do that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about our guest proposal to move from race-based affirmative action to one that's based on place, one that she thinks is a fairer version of addressing problems of opportunity, lack of opportunity, access to education. Cheryl Cashin stays with us. Her new book is called Race, Not Place, A New Vision of Opportunity in America.
And we want to hear what you think of the idea, giving a boost in college admissions to maybe low-income areas in big cities, in rural areas, places that maybe don't have the school funding, maybe that don't have a safe place for students to go and learn. Do you think they should get a boost when they submit their college application? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post over at the Central Time Facebook page.
And Cheryl, before we went to the news, you were talking about this race-neutral approach addressing the economic reality of working-class whites and being a move toward reconciliation. How do you think that would work with this plan? Would, for instance, underprivileged Caucasians be included in place-based affirmative action?
Absolutely. What I'm saying is that a high-achieving student from any situation, regardless of race, and where they're facing isolation or in an under-resourced school or a high-poverty neighborhood, should get special consideration. In addition to, you know, part of the reason why less than half of Americans live in middle-class neighborhoods today is that the affluent and the highly educated increasingly live in their own neighborhoods. And, we have a society which is premised, unfortunately, on what I call opportunity hoarding. Once a jurisdiction gets identified as very good and desirable, often we get more overinvestment in those areas and underinvestment elsewhere. And In the elsewhere places, you tend to have fewer experienced teachers, less resources, and you know, poverty is growing fastest in suburbs. You know, a lot of white people are increasingly finding themselves in under-resourced, rapidly impoverishing places. So, yeah, I've offered this proposal not as and I'm not saying it should be a substitute for race in the sense of I'm trying to be a direct proxy for race. I really mean it when I say that it's not fair to treat a person, whatever their race is, to treat a person who comes from a low opportunity school as if they're on a level playing field with people who are in super advantaged schools that have 20 AP courses.
Now, you talk about Rice University as being an example of a university that's really committed to getting students in the gates of their university that are truly diverse from different socioeconomic backgrounds as well as race. How has that worked there, and what is the lesson?
Well, I could speak more specifically to Amherst. I cite Rice as an example because Rice was founded with a charter that specifically said this school was only for white people, and it's just ironic that today white Americans are a minority at Rice. And I was saying Rice is kind of the future. We're having rapid demographic change, but universities have to, if they want socioeconomic diversity and racial diversity, they have to undertake direct efforts to achieve that. And I featured Amherst. One of the things that Amherst does is they find students from overlooked places by working with a partner called QuestBridge. In addition to changing the factors that universities look to into evaluating students, they should work with organizations like the Posse Foundation and QuestBridge and others that are very good at screening for and finding high-achieving students from low-opportunity places that can do the work. And when Amherst did that, when they went deep into the well of low-income, high-achieving students, the racial and economic complexion of their class changed. And you know, almost a quarter of students at Amherst, a very, very selective school, are low-income.
We were talking about the move. You said, I think your phrase was on life support as far as race-based affirmative action right now. Why do you think that is? Why is it going out of favor now at this point in history?
Well, Ward Connerly kick-started a movement against race-based affirmative action in the 1990s, and Republican legislators have picked up that movement. In the last few years, we've had a couple of states pass bans based on race. And also, there are organizations out there that actively recruit plaintiffs to sue and bring reverse discrimination claims, like Abigail Fisher from Texas. And you know, this comes from a place of, I mean, for the Abigail Fishers of the world, people who are white who can't benefit from race-based affirmative action, they don't like it. I mean, it doesn't seem fair to them, and so there's quite a bit of resentment out there. And you know, I talk about in the first chapter of my book the fact of, you know, it's uncomfortable to talk about, but it's true. In post-civil rights America, many whites feel that the gains of the civil rights movement have come at their expense, and there's a lot of anger and resentment about not getting ahead, and a lot of that anger and resentment is the reason why the policy is eroding. But meanwhile, interestingly, in polls, most people support the idea of giving a leg up to someone who works hard and is high achieving based on the disadvantages they've had to overcome, whereas most people in opinion polls do not support considering someone's race in as a factor in admissions. And I think it's worth putting out there, your listeners may not know this, I'm African-American, and I have two African-American boys, and I say in a letter to them at the end of the book, I've written a book that undermines the ability that you will benefit from race-based affirmative action or even legacy preferences. But, you know, there's a larger issue here at stake, one of fairness and creating a saner, multiracial politics in which people of all colors who struggle coalesce around policies that expand opportunity for everyone.
Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Cheryl Cashin, a professor of law at Georgetown University. She's the author of several books, including the recent Place Not Race, A New Vision of Opportunity in America.